Thoughts presented by Prescouter. We're focusing on big ideas in life science. I'm Jeremy Schmerer, and I'm joined by Dr. Ryan LaRanger and Dr. Michael Boat. Today, we're talking about data, regulatory compliance, clinical trials data, adverse events, patient populations, patient data, demographics, trends, manufacturing practices, historical sales, on and on and on. There's so much data out there, probably a lot more than we could discuss in our flyover style podcast. We will, however, highlight some challenges, trends, and possible solutions in the data world. Michael, why don't we kick off the discussion with you as it relates to data housing in the pharmaceutical industry? What jumps out to you?
Well, I think the first thing that jumps out to me is that the housing is getting bigger and bigger, right? So if we think about it from a living space perspective, maybe that's a good analogy. As we gather more and more data, and as pharmaceutical companies are gathering more and more data, the requirements are changing in terms of infrastructure that is required. So a simple example is if you look on the R&D side of the equation as one particular piece where data is generated, instead of having still images of things years ago, now multiple stream videos or even 3D models are being generated. So it's not just a linear problem in some cases, but an exponential growth of data sizes. And you can imagine that this brings along all kinds of challenges already: the sheer size, the transfer required, or the infrastructure required for transfer of data. And that's just one particular aspect of that. And we can talk maybe a bit more about the regulations around having such a housing.
So there's the physical infrastructure and then the infrastructure of just connecting the different data. Ryan, what can you add to that?
I mean, data organization is such a huge issue, and it's made much more complicated because when we're talking about data in the health sciences and in the pharmaceutical space, there are many different kinds, right? If you go to a data scientist and you ask them what are sort of the easiest and the hardest kinds of data to turn into insights, what they'll generally tell you is the more structured data is, the easier it is to turn that into insight, and the more unstructured the data is, the harder it is. What do we mean by structured data? The ideal, best kind of structured data is something like patient weight or patient height, where it's patient X has weight Y at time Z. You can put that into a spreadsheet and it's very easy. One of the hardest kinds of data are unstructured, where it's taking the doctor who saw this same patient, wrote down they weren't feeling well. What does that mean, right? That's also data. So we can spend some time talking about how all of those points are being captured too. But what I really want to bring up is that part of the exercise right now and part of the innovation right now is on basically organizing the data that exists, figuring out how it can be captured. And then importantly, how do we turn that into insights? I mean, as it stands right now, a recent study suggested that about one phase three trial can generate something on the order of 3.6 million data points. Right, one trial, and we run a bunch of them, and that's not counting any ongoing studies.
And of those different data that you're talking about, what percentage, if you had to guess, would be unstructured versus structured data points?
I mean, the ones that are currently being captured, it's probably something on the order of 70% structured. But part of that is because there's not... Sometimes if you can't use data or unstructured data, sometimes that gets lost. And that's really unfortunate because those can have some extremely important insights.
So we're talking about how to capture some of those additional insights and organize them in ways that are useful.
Organize is the key word. Exactly.
Yeah. And Michael, what commentary do you have on that? Are you hearing of any solutions that drug makers, or data collectors or folks that are implementing to make this more useful?
I think right now we're still in a stage where we're expanding so fast in the sheer amount of data, the kinds of different sources that Ryan alluded to, that I don't really think there's a good answer for it at this moment. I do think that a lot of companies are thinking about how to tackle this problem, right? So not only not losing out on any important data points, but also how can you make it accessible and navigatable? How can you index a data set? How can you make sure that in some cases it is a real world data feed? So meaning this is something that's coming in and immediately it's also coming out somewhere where there's some kind of analytics board tied to it. So there's also the storage versus direct transfer or actionable data difference between those two aspects. And I think there's a lot of individual solutions for particular types of data, but really connecting those and building those connectors, that's something that a lot of companies are working on. How can you do that in a meaningful way?
And I hate to pile on here in terms of talking about how complicated things are, but part of the issue too is the data brokers, where the data is coming from, and collecting that all into one place for, say, a pharmaceutical company. By way of example, right? You have EMRs or electronic medical records, Epic and so on. Getting data from them at high resolution sometimes isn't the easiest thing. And there's a whole suite of developers who work within Epic who are trying to turn the sort of raw data into something that's accessible and utilizable in terms of organizing the data, the pharmaceutical companies using it. Beyond that, there are also systems which can directly collect data from a given medical device before that data hits the EMR and the resolution of that data goes way down. And that can be very useful as well for running these clinical trials. And so that's one element which is important to consider. The other one is that we can break down the sort of world of data that we're talking about here from sort of two perspectives, right? You have the input, which are clinical data and some of these other factors, but then you also have the regulatory side, right? Where these are different from region to region. And, you know, its reporting requirements are different. Instructions have to go out in a bunch of different languages. They have to come back in a bunch of different languages. You know, you need to translate it both ways. And so that also falls under these auspices of data organization and data management and data actionability.
So, Michael, what commentary do you have on the regulatory component? And then also within the regulator's perspective, where do you think folks are seeing as the highest risk of not having adequate data? Is there a scenario that perhaps regulators are looking for, or even a scenario in which the pharma companies and drug makers can highlight a scenario that there's a lack of data on?
Yeah, those are good questions. I would say firstly, in terms of regulatory, the way I see it is that these developments, or especially if you think about AI, data models, the types of data, it's evolving so rapidly that legislation, one, but also regulatory, they cannot keep the same pace, right? So per definition, a lot of the rules, a lot of the structures, a lot of the standards for data are old-fashioned or outdated or no longer suitable or applicable to all the kinds of data we have. So this is a major challenge that regulators have. This is not restricted to any geography, right? This is something that's a global issue. And at the same time, there does seem to be an increased stringency on the regulatory requirements for data that is more sensitive. I would say, maybe to answer your second question, so I think if I'm right, you're asking basically what kind of examples would there be where data isn't correctly housed or where there might be worries around regulatory piece, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are asking, okay, there's always a need for more data. Mm-hmm. There's so much data out there. What can we do with it? Rather than saying, you know, maybe what would we do with more data or what's the biggest risk? Can you think of a scenario, maybe a low hanging fruit opportunity?
Ryan, you want to go first?
Oh my God, low-hanging fruit. So I was actually going to suggest this data world is very complex, and it covers a lot of material. But some of the solutions that are being explored are sort of similar throughout. And that can sort of help us organize things. So ultimately, when we're talking about the organization of data, some of that has to be done by people, but some of that can also be done by machine learning systems, which can in an automated fashion sort of get data close to the correct bucket. A technology that would be useful for sort of the people who are listening to this to consider when they're talking about the intelligent organization of data would be natural language processing generally and machine learning more broadly, where if you can house that data in an accessible way, and there are services which do that, which allow for access even of sort of large data sets in searchable archives where you're not paying an arm and a leg for, you know, cloud fees. The combination of accessible archiving, natural language processing, and machine learning can allow you to take even those more qualitative insights and then turn them to very specific questions, such as what's happening with the clinical trials we currently have ongoing? Are there any red flags that we need to be aware of? Are my sites performing how they should be performing? And are there any regulatory or adverse events red flags that are coming up in our system? There are a couple of innovative groups that are doing that, but that's what I would say would be the general solution paradigm we're seeing.
It's interesting because I think this is something that people on the sort of data generator side can do. One thing to realize though is that unfortunately, as I mentioned, due to some of that lagging, some of these regulatory procedures are still print this 1300 page book and show it to us, right? So even though there are good ways of structuring some data sources or making that process more efficient, there's still a big need on the regulator side to then catch up with that and make sure that some of those tools are also being leveraged. Because I think the willingness on the generator side is definitely there because they can moonlight some of the structured data for internal use as well, right? So not only for external presentation, but also internally. But on the regulator side, there seems to be somewhat of a struggle to keep up with that.
So it sounds like in both of the scenarios that you mentioned, or the scenarios that each of you have mentioned, there is a lot of manual processing still built into some of these data capture, or when you have the 1300 page report that gets slapped on your desk, somebody still has to go through that and extract some of those key endpoints and actionable items. And Ryan, you're sort of suggesting that there could be signals or NLP tools out there that can capture those more in an automated fashion. Is that right?
Ken is a very different perspective. Like that's, there are a lot of things that can happen, but I mean, I've spoken with payers and not just regulators, but a sort of payer groups who are extremely interested in these technologies. And they've said, basically, if a natural language processing or AI group wants to work with us, they need to have started working with us 2 years ago for us to even begin, because our systems are so complicated and we're dealing with so much money, right? And such a small margin for error that the system needs to be, it's very difficult for a one size fits all, right? And so you're seeing that where some AI groups are working to fill in this niche, but generally speaking, what we're seeing is that there are fit for purpose or built for purpose analytical groups who are coming up in the space, who are getting bought by larger companies. And that's likely where you're going to see it, you know, not just from a regulatory perspective, but also from a payer and a developer perspective.
So yeah, you bring up a good point. Had to have started working with us 2 years ago. So there's a maturity and an adoption curve to who's going to do the most with their data? Who's going to set up the best infrastructure? Is that an element here? A race to organize your data best? Michael?
Yeah, for sure. There's actually, it's very interesting. There is a lot of written Japanese clinical literature from about 1,000 years ago, I think, that contains a lot of old herbal medicine, etc. And so one of the challenges that people have nowadays is that the language sort of got lost in translation, literally, and people cannot really access that data anymore. I think that's the fear that some of these companies have, truly so in some way, right? A lot of the historical data could be, Ryan always calls this negative data space, right? Mm-hmm. It could tell you, don't do this experiment. We tried it. It didn't work, right? Very basic example. And at the same point, I think that this is something that will be of great benefit if you can access and if you can integrate that. And the one, or not the one, but the group that will do that best will definitely have competitive advantage over others.
Yeah, there's, I think that negative data and this kind of just unstructured data is an untapped goldmine in terms of the insights you can get from that. I mean, we're not even beyond what Michael said, which I think was wonderful, the repurposing of drugs, the, you know, sub-segmentation of patient populations. There is a lot of information and a lot of very valuable information which exists in the unstructured data space for optimizing things like clinical trials, which is heretofore unexplored, but which people are definitely working on.
Fantastic, you guys. There's a lot here. There's a lot of money here. There's a lot of opportunity, and it seems like there are some people who have realized that, but a lot of folks are in many ways lagging behind. We'll leave it there for now, since there's a lot of ways that we could go from here. Perhaps a part two is in order down the road, but we hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you're not subscribing already, find us on Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll try not to let 6 weeks go by before our next one. We were doing these about once a week before, so look for us to try to pick up that pace again. Thank you again for tuning in, and see you next time.